are called far above, because they bring through their roots, which are likened to feet. From bringing the newly fallen rainwater, the trees in Vrindavan began to manifest new leaves, sprouts, and blossoms, and they just enjoyed new growth. Similarly, materialistic persons often perform severe austerities to acquire the object of their desire. For example, politicians in America undergo grueling austerities by traveling about the countryside campaigning for election. Businessmen also will often deny personal comfort to make their business successful. Such austere persons, upon acquiring the fruits of their austerity, again become healthy and satisfied, like trees eagerly drink to gain the water, for enduring the austerity of a dry or
सिंधुभ्यः एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे कृष्ण। वी आर रीडिंग अबाउट द इफेक्ट ऑफ द रेन वाटर इन वृंदावन, हाउ द ट्रीज आर अगेन बिकमिंग रिवाइटलाइज्ड बाय द नरिशिंग रेन। ऑफ कोर्स इट इज so much similar to our bhakti process, which is also called as anushilanam, cultivation. Cultivation of what? Cultivation of our bhakti lata bij, which is compared to the process of watering the creeper with the nectar of Krishna katha and harinam. So this is the way our creeper gets vitalized. Just like an ordinary plant requires sunlight and water, the same process, analogous process, is about our bhakti lata bij, that to the extent we keep on giving this water. I heard an analogy of Srila Prabhupada where he says that the spirit soul has come to this world to enjoy separate from Krishna. In fact, that is the only difference between a devotee and a non-devotee. Both want to enjoy. A devotee wants to enjoy with Krishna, and a non-devotee wants to enjoy without Krishna. That is the only simple definition of what, how we are different from our friends who do not know Krishna. So that's a very simple, basic understanding Prabhupada gives. So we all have come here for that purpose, to enjoy separate from Krishna. But then he says that Lord Chaitanya has come to create a flood of love of God. Now when we have flood, it's not like a very channelized water going into the every track in the field in its proper slots of water going like that. A flood means it just flows uncontrollably and just covers the entire field with several feet of water. So Prabhupada says that sometimes seeds are there, but when they are covered with such huge amount of water, they cannot sprout. We know that. You require some water. Everybody has this common understanding that when you have just a few seeds and you have just a whole big water covering it, you know, it practically the seed dies. You know, when you have so much water, it just cannot, little water, yes, just the right amount should be there. Similarly, the seed of sense gratification for which we are come here, Mahaprabhu is sort of putting a challenge to the conditioned soul. I said, you want to enjoy? Okay, now look at this, what I'm going to do. I'm going to flood you with the whole flood of my love, my prema. And see how you can fructify, how your, you know, your materialist desires can fructify. I will just, they'll just damp out, they'll get, you know, kuchlela, kuchunzail. The Marathi says, kuchunzail. It will become, it will die. So this is the formula of Lord Chaitanya. To how we may be what we are, but he knows how to prevent our tendencies from fructifying. So that's the process of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's not just little water, but a devotee's life is sort of flooded from morning to night, to the extent he remains absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, remembering Krishna, chanting Krishna, serving Krishna, worshipping Krishna, eating his prasadam, taking rest for Krishna, applying tilak for Krishna, everything he does for Krishna with Krishna in mind. So he's just absorbed in Krishna, and then there's nothing left really to really, you know, enjoy, because in any case we know that Krishna absorption gives you higher taste. Vairagya vidanja bhakti yoga, that the knowledge of Krishna creates a sense of vairagya, where you don't want to really want to indulge in our lower nature. So the purport, the authors are pointing our consciousness today towards the theme of austerity. So generally when we speak of austerity, is not a very palatable word. I mean, it is not for me at least. Austerity, oh, okay. That means something you should keep away from, or just do a little bit of it and just get away with it, or some nirjal. Like I was being reminded by my friends, nirjal is coming 20th June, Prabhu. So you know, you're getting a little, you're becoming aware, or one day off in the year, there's a big austerity, supposed to be bookish study for all of us. So austerity is something which keeps us sort of, you know, not in a very pleasant mood of acceptance. Prasadam, like, no. No. But when you look at austerity, especially when you look at austerity from the point of view of Krishna, the way he explained in the 17th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he has given us three austerities, right? Three austerities given us: austerities of the body, austerities of the mind, and austerities of the speech. Kaya, manasa, and vacha. And we are told that, you know, irrespective of your ashram, yajna, dana, and tapa are compulsory. It is not that it is only for the brahmacharis to practice austerity, only for the swamis. Jnana, dana, and tapa are for everybody. All varnas and all ashrams. So, and we look at Krishna's definition of what he thinks of his austerity, is very beautiful, because it really is a very broad and beautiful understanding than just the one where we think to my austerity. Oh, Prabhu, when you look at a thin devotee, he said, Prabhu, in my, as a, you know, a medical guy, my first question, Prabhu, I'm performing a lot of austerities. You know, see a thin devotee and is not putting on weight, and say, oh, are you performing austerities? So when you look at austerities, you look at only a person who's eating less, ordering every Ekadashi Nirjal. That's the, like, austerity. But no, there is just much more to it than just that. When he says that austerity of the body is giving respect to seniors, elders, brahmanas, Vaishnavas, spiritual master, and those in knowledge. Right? So, it was quite striking when we read of it that austerity is connected with respect. Austerity is connected with respect. The tendency being that we do not want to respect others, but rather want to get respect for ourselves, that being our actual, you know, conditioned nature, where we would like to have people just respect us, Prabhu, this and that. So then, to give respect is an act of austerity, because you are really acting against your very nature. This is like in yoga systems, they have ahar and pratyahar, right? Pratyahar they have, one of the rungs of the Ashtanga yoga system, pratyahar, where you just negate the lower nature. So this is like pratyahara in bhakti, in Krishna consciousness, where you have a tendency to accept respect, but said no, amanina manadina, and this is so much more beautiful and so much more easier, because to expect respect can be a very frustrating experience, because you have, what control do we have of other people giving you respect, right? If I'm expecting respect, and it could be anything, it could be a recognition when I'm just passing down the road, or a little bit of smile, and I said, Hare Krishna Prabhu, Hari Bol. I said, he didn't look at me. He didn't recognize me, you know. He didn't acknowledge me, right? Or he didn't give me a garland, or he didn't give me four obeisances, or he didn't respect me as a counselor, or so he didn't respect me as a senior devotee. So you're really in a very conditioned way thinking of what you're going to expect, and you have absolutely no control over that. So if you get it, you're happy. If you don't get it, you're a little sour-faced, you know, I didn't get it, what I... But giving is under your control, is it not? It is under your control. Amanina is difficult, but the manadena is the more easier part. Right? You just give respect. And it becomes so much more easier. And so much more... I would like to think of a devotee as... I was hearing Prabhupada's class while deity services. Prabhupada says, Kanti, Tilak and Shikha are, unless they are backed up by devotional qualities, are like good advertisements. You know, like I'm advertising, okay, look at this Prabhu, I'm a dhoti kurta, and I look at this Shikha, and look at this Kanti and Tilak. I'm a devotee, so it's a good ad. But the ad has to have some substance, right? So, when Prabhupada says, when you have devotional qualities, he was talking about sense gratification. If you're attached to sense gratification, you're not a devotee. That immediately rules out a person like myself as a devotee. Right? So, you'd like to see a devotee as having not just a garb or a dress or an attire or an appearance, but you'd like to see a devotee as having a devotional personality. Like they have personal development courses, you know, they try to do this, various things they like to do. So why not we also understand that actually, it is not just what, this may be a starter, the dress and the tilak may be a good starter, a good starting point. But ultimately, when you look at a devotee in a holistic way, in a more wholesome way, you like to see him having, embodying some devotional traits, a devotional personality. In that personality, probably the first thing which should be expected or should be manifested is the symptom of willingness to give respect. Now it starts off even from a simple thing like meat eating. Okay, you may have a deep religious beliefs of why you should not eat meat. Thou shalt not kill and this and that and whatever you have. It is ahimsa. These are all religious beliefs of various dharmic, you know, followers. But even if you are not one of those followers of a religious cult or religious group, even then, simply as a civilized being, the respect for life is a common denominator to all living entities. Right? When you respect life as it manifests in this world, like you are living, the goat is living, the chicken is living, the pig is living, the sheep is living, the cow of course is living, there is respect for life. That in itself becomes a good reason to really, you know, avoid this unnecessary violence. Respect for life. It starts off with that. And the opposite of respect for life would be considered as act of cruelty. Right? So if you're not a Hare Krishna, if you're not even, you know, a strict follower of some dharma, even then you are involved in an indirect direct act of cruelty, because you're going against the very fiber, the very fabric of civilized life, which means to respect life as it manifests in this world. Right? All life comes, all life is divine, all life is sacred. Because it comes from the most sacred person. There is a God. Now, according to religious belief, you may say Allah or Krishna, that's a detail. We don't get into that. But on a very secular level also, that because life comes from the most divine being, God, there has to be respect for wherever it manifests, even as an ant or a pigeon or a cow or a demigod. Right? So that's what respect is. But of course, Krishna is not talking about basic those things to Arjun, who is far ahead of that. He's talking about respecting brahmanas, parents. I think there's a lot of talk these days about our movement now again recognizing the need to respect our parents. Somehow we have, in our immature utsaha for Krishna, we just sort of kept our parents behind. But I share with my whenever I get a chance that how I remember nostalgically the experience of getting at the morning and touching my parents' feet. That's how I was trained up in my childhood, to get up in the morning every day. The first, before brushing your teeth, going to the bathroom also, you just touch your mother and your father. And then when I was to go to my hometown, my kaka was there, my kaki was there, aunt and uncle, I would touch their feet, and my granny was there, I would touch her feet. Right? That was like a daily schedule when we used to go for a vacation to our native town. And this may appear like something which is very archaic now. But it is interesting to see that Prabhupada also ingrained this in his initial disciples when Brahmananda Prabhu went to meet his mother. Right? And in fact, even after the initiation was over, I think it was the first initiation or the second one, I don't know which one it was. Just the very few first, maybe the first one in 22nd Avenue when Prabhupada's first initiation took place. There are some parents or the mothers of the devotees sitting there. And the first thing, before even asked them to offer obeisance to him as a Diksha Guru, he said, go offer obeisance to your parents. And then I think when Brahmananda Prabhu went home, you know the story, right? He rang the bell and then his mother came out and she didn't find anybody because the person was Dandavat Pranams in front of him and said, it's a big, fat, huge, 7 feet tall, 250 pounds person. I'm sure the mother was not so big. But she was like really amazed and she was really sort of, embarrassed. What are you doing? So in America this may sound like very strange behavior. Somebody offering, touching the mother's feet, father's feet. But for India it is very common. Because nowadays people, there's a little bend and touch you, right? And nowadays you've seen that? just bend a little bit and it's like a Trikonasan type of, small lynch on the waist a little bit here and then just, So, something is there. But respect for parents and so wonderful. Because respect sets the mood for the next event. Respect is not an end in itself. Respect is a platform. Respect is a platform which is set in your mindset, in your consciousness, for the next most important aspect of your devotional behavior, and that is obedience. If I respect my parents and touch their feet, obviously I'm going to be more receptive when they tell me to do this or don't tell me to do that. But if I don't have that basic respect, then when they come forth with some do this and don't do that type of thing, right? Then my first response is rebellion. Right? Because the basic respect is not as much as it should be. Right? So that respect can be of various grades, of course. You may just respect life as it is outside. Comes to closer ones, you may respect much higher. Like respecting your wife, respecting your husband, right? That's basic relationship. Then, in days you have to give seminars now to teach people respect your wife and respect your husband. You require seminars for that, 3-hour seminar for respecting your wife, right? It's so strange that we have gone so far into non-devotional, non-Vedic behavior that a simple act which comes as a natural gesture. I have this partner who I'm married, and she's my god sister, or she's my beloved wife, she's my dharampatni, and it goes without saying that I must just respect her as an individual, as my friend and partner in life, who's coming to my life for assisting me in my material duties and spiritual duties. So just the most obvious natural thing to do, but then it has to be ingrained. Respect your wife, Prabhu. You know, respect your husband. So then respect turns into respectful behavior. The act of respect, which is a physical act, automatically goes into a behavioral pattern, which is respectful behavior. Right? So then your words become more respectful automatically. So then you can see from body you come to your body come to speech automatically. It starts off with the body, huh? And comes to vacha. So respectful speech, you say Prabhu, you say Mata, Mataji. Right? So when you respect a woman, then you see as a mother, and then you address her as a mother as well. Respectful behavior. Right? So then that's what it is. So we have to move on to that phase where we can, so we respectfully talk to people. Prabhupada talks about what is respect of, what is austerity of speech. Prabhupada sometimes makes things so simple. Also speech means, you know, we can go and give a big seminar on that. One line. That you do not talk those things which agitate others. So beautiful and so sublime. That sums up so many things. Right? That you speak those things only automatically which are hitam, priyam and beneficial. Right? Which are satyam, priyam, hitam, that is there. But then basically in one line it is, you do not speak those words which agitate others. So then that is not just, as you can see, something which you do with devotees. But you're saying in a railway line, a platform, you know, somebody just, someone just nudges you or someone comes in front of you, you know, and barges off in the line before you and he's samastani. And then you know, some words will come out and, you know, so, you know, you get agitated severely, right? So non-agitating behavior is an act of respect. Because immediately it drags you to the tamoguna. And when you have respect and respectful behavior, it keeps you on the surface, floating on the level of sattvaguna. The moment we leave that platform aside and just, then you fall down. Disrespectful behavior automatically goes into rajaguna and tamoguna. Now even the demons were taught this, even the demons had this. Now when we call ourselves devotees, we'll have to really cross-check with our demoniac friends. Right? So when Ravan, or even Hiranyakashipu, or even Kamsa, when Narada Muni would come to their ashram, to their darbar, they would get up, offer a seat and wash their feet, and hear them. They may not follow them, but they would at least hear them. But at least that was there. So even a daitya, a low-class man like Kamsa, who was so cruel, when Narada Muni came, said, yes, what is the news for me? And said, okay, you know, I've heard that these people are taking birth, you know, in Yadu dynasty, and you know, better be prepared. So then he got angry and said, okay, I'll kill everybody. Right? So even the low-class demons respected people. Right? So what to talk of Vaishnavas, how much more is expected from us as a devotee, whether it comes to respecting our parents or guru. Now we can see that act of non-respect has disastrous, deleterious effects in Vedic societies. Right? At least two examples are striking in the Vedic literature which we have. One is the example of Romarshana Sutta, other example of Indra. Right? Now Indra is sitting there in his darbar enjoying all the lavish apsaras, you know, presenting their skillful arts for his sensual pleasure and all that stuff is going on, right? And then being absorbed in a romantic mood of sense gratification, right? His beloved Guru Maharaj, worshipful Brihaspati, comes into the ashram, into his darbar. He does not get up. After the body is giving respect. When somebody sinner comes, you say, get up. The basic thing is, like in our school, right? Remember? When teacher walked into the class, what will you do? Good morning, teacher. She would say like this. Thank you, teacher. This is our childhood. I remember this. We all do that. Get up in the morning. Good morning, sir. Anybody in the vice principal comes in, immediately get up. Good morning, sir. Thank you, sir. Right? Basic. You don't like that teacher, you know, because he beat you last time, you know. But still, you know, you see him, you're supposed to say, good morning. Yes, teacher. In military training also, you know, if you don't salute your senior, right, you ask Sishastang Prabhu, he will tell you, the heavy punishment. A senior walks by, your senior and cadre, your teacher, like they are like gurus, right? Just don't salute them. Big punishment. Big punishment. You have to carry that bag of whatever number of kilos that is and take some several chakkar of that big maidan. And the whole day we stand there when everybody is going for their, you know, food or wherever they're going, just salute everybody. Because you didn't salute your guru, you just salute everybody. As a punishment in military. So you're trained rigorously, obedience, respect. Because when respect comes, obedience. When a guru will say, shoot, you have to shoot. So that respect creates a platform of obedience. Right? So he didn't get up. And you know how things just changed for Brihaspati and cursed him and so many things. Then he lost his kingdom and all that stuff happened. Right? So many things just happened because of that. Again, the same Indra. Of course, you know, Indra is a good example for all of us, right? Always. Right? Indra is a very wonderful devotee for all of us. Just one of our friends who does the wrong things all the time. And just we know this is not to be done. Right? So we like him for that. We like Indra for that. He keeps on telling from his behavior, this Prabhu you should not do. So you get a garland, you give it to your elephant from, who was it? Astavakra Muni. Right? He got a garland from Astavakra Muni and he gave it to his elephant. Elephant said, garland, you know, it's not food. This custard under his leg. And he was cursed. And he was cursed in such a way that he lost his kingdom. I mean, imagine losing a garland under an elephant's feet and then losing the entire kingdom. You know, Indra is a big man, you know, just for this small act of disrespect to a great sadhu, a great yogi, a mystic yogi, and what a disaster, what a collapse of his entire fortune. Lost his kingdom and the demons attacked and, you know, they had to run away and then they had to have a big truce and then, okay, and I went to Brahma and then, you know, the whole thing happened. And go to Vishnu and say, what should we do? Tell us what should be done. He said, okay, don't worry. Sign a truce with them and then a Samrut Manthan thing. Oh, what amount of labor and what amount of hardship just for this garland being neglected. If he just had better sense to hold that garland properly and say, thank you, Prabhu, Hare Krishna. Which had just the simple thing which in a basic devotee does, you know, thank you Prabhu, Hare Krishna, it's a good garland, thank you. I love it, Hari Bol. And so disrespect is an act of pride. Classic example is Indra. When you don't respect other people, it is not that you are on a neutral platform, I don't respect it. But it automatically carries you to a platform of pride. Right? So if it is A is not an A, it is not just is A minus, it just goes off to something else. It goes on to the level of a negative behavior, just pride. And of course pride is the most dangerous anartha for a practicing devotee. Again, physical austerity of just standing and respecting when this great sadhu, son of Vyasdev, Rumarsham Sutta, full of knowledge, it is said that he was the one who was entrusted. I know Vyasdeva gave his various things to various of his followers. The entire itihas section of Vedic literature was entrusted. This is you are a professor of itihas. So he knew all itihas of the entire universe. All itihas of the entire universe. From Brahma's time. He had so much knowledge. And he would be invited by, as a professor of itihas, he would be invited by so many sages to come and give him seminars and talks and discourses on itihas and what lessons do we learn and so many things. So he was like a very, very big man in the Vedic society. Apart from the fact that he was son of Vyasadeva, which itself is a very huge amount of glory over there. But anyway, what we see here is very important, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead walks into the assembly. Same thing like Brihaspati walking into the assembly. He comes in and he continues his discourses. He is not talking prajalpa, my dear Prabhus. He's not talking about films. He's talking about itihas of God and the gods. Right? But the act of disrespect to Balaramji brought him doom. And Balaramji, being Adi Guru, thought it fit to punish him with nothing less than death. Not a slap or, you know, words of chastisement or disregard and said, you wretched fellow. No, it just simply kill him. Just eliminate this person. Out. Right? So that's respect. That simple act of respect. And look at what happened to him. He died. Right? So, therefore austerity, and of course the act of respect. What glory is there for respect? How much when you just respect people, austerity of speech, not as austerity of the mind is there. That's a whole big topic, of course, and cannot take all these subjects, but it is definitely very useful and interesting. But what is most wonderful to understand is that when we have a respectful behavior, then it automatically elicits respect from others for Krishna. That's most wonderful. That when you interact with people with respect as a Vaishnava, then what you get as a payback for that, that people respect you, of course, because you are respectful, you get back what you give. It's a law of nature. Newton's third law. You give pain, you get pain. You give respect, you get respect. It works on subtle level also. The laws of nature are to work in that way also. But when they respect you as a devotee, then actually you are connecting them to Krishna. And that's wonderful. So Jayananda Prabhu was just that. He was so respectful to people. So any ruffian, any hippie, any drunken guy down the road, he doesn't know what he's doing in life, is completely out of his body, out of his senses, and he just dealt with them so much of love and respect, and they immediately got attracted to his personality. Respectful behavior is attractive. And disrespectful behavior is equally repulsive. Yesterday one man was coming to me, he was promoting his product, his medical product to me, he came to me saying that, "Sir, do you have any classes? I'm staying in Cotton Green. And, you know, I've got a child who's 5 years old and she's very center of stage type of person and she's always brilliant and outstanding in her performances in school and everything else. But I don't know why she's so disobedient. So do you have some classes? You know, she's only 5 year tiny tot, you know, and she's already becoming disrespectful because of disobedience. Imagine." Right. But Jayananda Prabhu was like that. He was so respectful, automatically elicited respectful behavior from people. So he would just be sitting, you know, doing his most famous contribution we should never forget in history, because sometimes we tend to forget our past heroes. That's a big mistake we do. Sometimes we are so much caught up with our here and now type of thing. But we forget that the legacy which we are enjoying today are the ripened fruit of the hard devotional labor of people of the past. Not distant past like Prahlad, that's of course there, but the recent past, like people like Jayananda Prabhu. Someone's walking down the road, a hippie with drunken state, and said, "Can you just come and help?" And he would allure him with a piece of prasad. You know, hippies are always hungry. Right? Get some prasad and said, "Can you just do this for me?" And it is thus the way you say it. That majority induce a person to, okay, yeah, of course, I think it's a very small thing. Everyone knows how Jayapada Maharaj was caught up in Krishna consciousness like that, right? He just asked him to hit a nail. It's a nail. Can you just hold this nail? And then he would hit the nail into that big wheel. Said, "You just hold the nail so nicely." What is so great about holding a nail? So you just held this nail so nicely that I could hit it so nice. Right? So in this way, the whole day this man was just going doing something else. He was going somewhere else, Jayapada Maharaj. He just got involved with this nail, and it was not the nail which got hooked. It was he was nailed to Krishna. Practically, Jayananda Prabhu nailed him to Krishna. You know, forever. Today he is one of the greatest Vaishnavas ever born. Right? So that's how he was. And one of those nails, he was having these thick shoes and was walking, and this one of those nails went right through his shoe. Like, you know, if you have this Jagannath, nails are not a small khili, they are khilas. They're big, big long nails of 4 inch and 6 inches, you know. So the 6 inches nails, they just went through his shoe and through his leg. It's a big wound. There is no time to go to a doctor, because that is useless waste of time. Because Rath Yatra is coming so soon. And therefore, the whole time he is just working with that bleeding leg, painful leg. That pain was so intense because it was went through his flesh. He did not get sleep for 3 days. 3 days, no sleep, but constant working. He was not a workaholic. He was a servaholic. He just like to serve. He was always serving devotees, always serving the holy name, always serving Lord Jagannath. And his spontaneous attraction was to always chant. He was a great kirtani. One of the greatest kirtanis in our movement was Jayananda Prabhu. Right? A spontaneous lover of the holy name. And there was never a tiring moment. And there were just three people in the Sankirtan party who would like to take devotees for Sankirtan. Just go out and perform Harinam on the roads. That was his favorite pastime. Right? So he would go out on the roads and just two or three people, it hardly induces any ecstasy, right? We have a lot of people, you know, 15, 20, 30 people, then you know, one is two, three mrudangas are playing and two, three kartas are playing, and then you know, the loudspeaker is there, and you really get charged up and you start, you know, getting some spirit. But just three people doing Harinam, you just can't get. But for him, it didn't really matter. It was two or three, but he was always in ecstasy of chanting, jumping, dancing with his vampers. So a big man comes to him. He's always there in the Sankirtan party, irritating them. It's wild words. He was following some other denomination of some Christian, whatever they were following, and they felt these are all devils or whatever, Satans, whatever they call them, right? And they were always talking irritable things to him, obscene words, abusive words. Yeah, you know, you're always irritating him like that. Right? And somehow or the other, he would neglect them. He would just neglect this guy. Right? But he kept on abusing, kept on irritating, kept on obscening. A red light came for signal on the roads and they had to stop. So everyone stopped and he also stopped because the cars were passing the other side. So this guy came to him and said, so Jayananda Prabhu looks into his face and said, if you do not stop harassing the devotees, Krishna will kill you. And the signal became green and he walked across the street, and this guy was in his own frenzy, and he walked with that signal on, and there a bus came and just dashed him and he was dead. And the Kirtan party went on. They looked behind. Sorry. This was Jayananda Prabhu. Powerful person. Another big hulky man came, you know, 7 feet tall. All this must have looked like, I don't know what, Pralam Basura something. Long hair, red eyes, and you know, big man, drunken, old man. Again, same thing, abusing, shouting, stop this chanting. Jayananda Prabhu had so much love in his heart, so much love for people, said, just chant Hare Krishna, just chant Hare Krishna. And he was about to attack the devotees. The moment he said this, he just turned around and went aside as if he's not bothered. There are so many stories, of course, are there. I was reading just a few minutes back, but there's a whole book, Radha Amar Vilas, on him. Once we know that his disappearance of this world was a deadly disease of leukemia, cancer, blood cancer, right? Not a very old person. But he was in the hospital, and one of his friends, Mukta Kesh Prabhu, comes in with some food, I think prasad for him. And he finds that he's sleeping on the floor. And it's very surprising to him. And then he comes, and the only place to sit in the hospital is the bed. The bed was empty. There's nobody on there sitting on the bed. So he comes and sits on the bed. And Prabhu said, please do not sit there. So the bed is empty, right? Why should I not sit here? And then he looked aside and said, look, there is Prabhupada. On the pillow was a picture of Prabhupada sleeping with his head on the pillow. He said, Prabhupada is sleeping there. He said, in my life, I have never slept on such a comfortable pillow, a comfortable bed. It can only be for Srila Prabhupada and not for me. So Prabhupada is sleeping on that bed. We were sitting there, set aside. And he was sleeping only on the floor of the hospital bed. That is the amount of respect he had for Prabhupada. For him, it was not as a picture. It was Prabhupada. And his, you know, working hard, this nail story was at the time when he had to make this nice asana for Prabhupada to sit, because Prabhupada was coming tomorrow and he was going to sit on this asana, and he had to be all awake, night awake, because this asana to be just the way he wanted, so Prabhupada could sit on it properly. So, some other time, you know, he would actually one of the stories given there is, one devotee is there, very dear friend of his. And somehow he knows that this person is, you know, now going to leave his body very soon. So he comes up to him and he's very shy about a person. But he wants to glorify him. And I think this is exactly what would glorify him properly in today's day. After all, speaking about Jayanand Prabhu is an act of tremendous respect, because ultimately respect, when you talk of respect, respect at a higher level turns into worship. When you respect a person very intensely in your heart, automatically it is not just respectful words or respectful behavior. Respect would turn into it would evolve into another behavioral pattern, which would turn into a level of worship, right? Like, of course, you respect your guru, but you respect him so much that you show your respect through act of worship. Like, you respect God, obviously, but you don't just respect God by offering obeisances to him, but you worship him with all paraphernalia, and everything in the world is meant for his worship, right? So respect turns into worship. So we're trying to do that. We're just trying to, you know, sort of worship this great person today by hearing and speaking about him. So he comes up to him and said, Prabhu, and he was very shy, and he didn't have any much, you know, eloquent words to speak, and he was not like a very erudite scholar or something like that. He just came up to him and said, and he was praying, and he felt that at that point of time, this devotee felt that the Saraswati sort of descended on my tongue, and I could speak some words which would be befitting to glorify Jayanand Prabhu. He said, just like Lord Chaitanya came to this world and he flooded the world with Krishna consciousness, not just the world, he flooded the entire universe with Krishna consciousness. Similarly, you have come to this world as a servant of Srila Prabhupada to flood the world with the mercy of Lord Jagannath. We cannot think of a Jagannath Rath Yatra in those days without the participation of Jayananda Prabhu. Practically all those carts, San Francisco and other places, were all made by him. Sometimes almost single-handedly. It is difficult to even imagine. You can make a cart. We can't make even a simple stool or simple charpai, you know, without the help of some people. And not to make a whole cart for Jagannath. Strong enough to make him stand, make the devotees stand, Prabhupada sit there, to make the whole cart practically single-handedly. But that was what he was. He was an ardent, sold-out servant of Prabhupada and Lord Jagannath. And he said these beautiful words for his pleasure. And that is the, you know, highlight of his success. And, you know, among our Vaishnava calendar, some of the very few people whom we acknowledge among contemporary Vaishnavas is Jayananda Prabhu, Gaurgovind Maharaj, and I think one or two other people also, who are even Vaishnava calendar, even they are and they will be remembered for posterity for thousands of years to come. And therefore, when you look at a Rath Yatra cart, then we cannot miss Jagannath, Balram Subhadra, we cannot miss Prabhupada, of course, but we cannot even miss the picture of Jayananda Prabhu. Because he has to be there. Just like, as we understand, the picture is not different from the person. Jayananda Prabhu is there even right now in every Rath Yatra, happy to see Jagannath Swami going all over the world parading, chanting Hare Krishna. He was the most enthusiastic devotee, the most loving devotee, never went into a bad mood. He was never sulking, never complaining, no one's coming to help me, what is this going on, all of you guys in Maya, this and that. Never negative, always positive. And everyone just loved him for that. So, you know, in terms of our Vaishnava Acharya songs, the most appropriate line for him would be this: Dhira, Dhira Jana Priya, Priya Karo, Nirmatsara Pujitav, Krishna Kirtana Gartana Nartana Tanaparo. He was always doing Krishna Kirtan, always dancing in Kirtan. This was his highlight, hallmark. And was always dear to all the devotees. Everyone simply loved him. If he was there, he was an outstanding devotee. If he is chanting in the temple room, then everyone is chanting in the temple room, but everyone knew that this chanting is pure chanting. This kirtan is not coming from his throat or from his tongue, it's coming from the depths of his heart. He is serving Harinam by chanting Hare Krishna. He is serving the holy name. His chanting was outstanding, and as I said before, as a complete devotional personality. He's a complete person, a complete devotee in every way. His love for Prabhupada, his love for the devotees, and his compassion to engage conditioned souls in Krishna's service, and his love for Krishna was simply remarkable. And we can do a lot of good for ourselves if we just, you know, spend some time in reading about him, talking about him, discussing about him, how, what it means to be a devotee of the Lord. Far more than the just the advertising devotee who are just having a garb, but actually the substance of respect, of love and worship for Guru, Krishna and the Vaishnavas. That is Jayanand Prabhu, a perfect Vaishnava. And of course we know that where he is today, he is with Krishna, serving him in his eternal Nitya Leela. His grace Jayananda Prabhu ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Any questions, any comments? Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Hare Krishna.